Have you ever noticed how we talk about rape as if it's weather, something that just happens? She was raped. A woman was sexually assaulted. The perpetrator vanishes from the sentence entirely, leaving only the victim and an invisible force. This linguistic sleight of hand reveals something profound about how we've constructed our understanding of sexual violence. Rape culture isn't just about individual bad actors or explicit misogyny. It's the water we swim in, invisible, omnipresent, and so normalized that even its victims sometimes can't see it clearly. Women internalize these patterns too, calling each other sluts, questioning survivors' stories, and perpetuating the myth that modest dress prevents assault. Female judges have described armed gang rapes as theft of services. The problem isn't a few monsters lurking in alleys. It's an entire infrastructure of beliefs, institutions, and everyday behaviors that trivialize sexual assault while claiming to despise it. When an 11-year-old girl in Cleveland, Texas, was gang raped by over 20 men, the defense attorney described her as a spider luring men into her web. The community worried more about how these young men have to live with this the rest of their lives than the child's trauma. If we can't agree that an 11-year-old wasn't asking for it, what hope exists for adult victims? Researchers have identified 7 contradictory myths Americans cling to. She asked for it, it wasn't really rape, he didn't mean to, she wanted it, she lied, rape is trivial, and rape is deviant. These myths create a psychological safety net, a flowchart that always ends with everything's fine. They protect our belief in a just world where innocent people don't suffer randomly. But reality tells a different story. Only 2-8% of rape reports are false. At least 1 in 5 women will be raped in their lifetime. And 76 serial rapists in one study committed 439 rapes, plus over 1,000 other violent crimes. Rapists aren't confused about consent. They're deliberate predators who like rape, not just sex. Two friends face a simple problem. How does one get home safely at 11 p.m. with her Greyhound when the car isn't available? Immediately, they begin strategizing. Dog-friendly cabs, overnight stays, safety calculations. This constant vigilance is so normal for women that they barely notice it, yet men rarely experience anything comparable. Women memorize endless safety rules. Keep hair short, dress modestly in tear-resistant clothing, never use phones in public, check under cars before entering, never walk alone at night, never drink excessively. One viral email advised avoiding ponytails, overalls, and grocery store parking lots between 5 to 8:30 a.m., all completely false information. University freshmen described their party strategy using military language. We never leave anyone behind. They're 18 years old, discussing social gatherings using battlefield terminology. The catch-22 is maddening. If assaulted while walking alone, women are told they should have anticipated danger. But if they openly discuss their constant vigilance, they're labeled paranoid man-haters. Meanwhile, the actual perpetrators remain conveniently absent from the conversation, as if rape is a natural disaster rather than a crime committed by specific individuals. When a college student accused NFL quarterback Ben Roethlisberger of sexual assault, the responding police sergeant had posed for photos with him earlier that evening. He went straight to Roethlisberger's party and called the victim this drunken bitch, declaring, "Women can do this. It's bullshit." This wasn't an isolated incident. Research with 428 first responders found they estimated 32.7% of rape reports were false, some claiming 95 to 100% were fabricated. Over 20% believed victims could resist rape if they really wanted to. Police departments manipulate statistics through questionable unfounding practices. Baltimore unfounded over 30% of rape cases and didn't investigate 40% of emergency rape calls. New Orleans misclassified 46% of reported rapes as lesser offenses. Some women have been arrested for reporting their own rapes. Patty, a legally blind Wisconsin woman, was raped at knife point but couldn't identify her attacker. When she incorrectly suggested her daughter's boyfriend as a suspect, Detective Woodmansey became convinced she was lying and pressured her into a false confession. 4 years later, DNA matched Joseph Bong, already imprisoned for another sexual assault. The system designed to protect survivors instead punishes them. Most reported rapes never reach trial. 64% aren't reported at all, only 12% lead to arrest, and prosecutors decline about half of those cases. In Salt Lake County, only 6% of rape cases were prosecuted over 9 years. Even when juries correctly convict, judges can undermine justice with their own biases. One judge told a convicted rapist he wasn't a classic rapist, just someone who lost control of normal restraint because the victim was a pretty girl who you fancied, as if men must constantly restrain themselves from raping unconscious women. Media coverage often reinforces these patterns. When Roman Polanski was arrested after 30 years as a fugitive, journalists minimized his rape of a 13-year-old, with one suggesting he did not know her real age, ignoring that he gave her champagne and quaaludes. Directors including Martin Scorsese and Woody Allen signed petitions defending him. Popular culture normalizes sexual violence through entertainment. A 2006 action movie depicted a man sexually assaulting his girlfriend in public despite her screaming and struggling, yet the scene is commonly mislabeled online as consensual public sex. A 1992 study found 42% of TV storylines suggested victims wanted to be raped, 38% implied they were lying, and 46% suggested they asked for it. These representations shape public understanding, making it harder for real victims to be believed. Despite this bleak landscape, something fundamental is shifting. Survivors sharing their experiences is no longer radical. New support venues appear constantly. The CLARI Act requires colleges to maintain public crime logs. Obama's 2013 Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act strengthened protections. A Dear Colleague letter clarified that sexual violence constitutes Title IX discrimination, requiring immediate school action. Survivors founded Know Your Ikes to educate students about their rights, leading to the first formal Title IX non-compliance findings against universities. Affirmative consent policies have spread across campuses and state legislatures. The Yes Means Yes model provides confidence that paying attention to partners' enthusiasm and respecting boundaries prevents crossing the line between sex and rape. Social media enables survivors to share stories and explode myths that sexual violence is rare or shameful. This voice proliferation transformed the Bill Cosby case from whispers to front-page news after social media amplified comedian Hannibal Buress's comments. The work continues. We must challenge rape myths, hold media accountable for responsible portrayals, and support survivors who come forward. Most importantly, we must shift our understanding of consent from absence of refusal to presence of enthusiasm. The dam has burst, driven by young people refusing silence. For the first time in decades, there's guarded optimism. The invisible hand of rape, that linguistic and cultural erasure of perpetrators, is becoming visible. And what we can see, we can finally dismantle.